Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben. I forgot how close the microphone was. I just bumped my chin into it and startled myself. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Hi, guys.
Hello,
Hi.
Ben. Did you have a nice time on your holiday?
I did, thank you.
Yeah.
You literally said just before we recorded
that I wished you'd stayed on your holiday.
Yeah, and it's not because I said something rude to you first.
Now, if you want to tell lies, if you want to build the relationship with the audience on lies, then you go right ahead.
Sorry, I didn't. We've got
you're
a
right,
Ben. Toxic relationship.
A thin tissue of lies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm back, but Ashton's not happy about it.
No,
so.
Which makes what I'm about to do a bit even worse.
Yeah.
Because you were just mean to me.
You're going to be rewarded for that, babe.
And your birthday was while you were away.
It was.
And our present to you hadn't arrived in time.
Oh.
So I guess I'm going to have to give it to you now.
And now it's in the bin, so I don't deserve it.
No, it's not. It's here.
It's really okay. Easy to hide.
I've put it in a card. Okay. Because I feel like if I just handed you something, it would look a bit, you know.
It's a check.
Yeah. It's £10.
to buy with what
says,
you want.
It says dickhead on the front of it, which
does.
Is a bit rude. B Potts.
It's you.
That is me. I've never seen it spelled with one
it's your
T
rap
before.
Name.
B Potts. I like it.
I prefer B Poots.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Okay, let's go in. Whose spittle sealed this?
That would be mine.
Okay.
Special spittle.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Ashton.
You're welcome. I thought about using a glue stick, but I couldn't find it.
Okay, I've got a lovely, lovely card.
Yeah.
With a beautiful tree with lots of flowers on it. And it says, with deepest sympathy.
Show the boys and girls that.
I left it's got the price.
It's got the price on the back as well.
Yeah.
That's really good. Now, I'm doing that thing that you do.
When you know there's money.
When you know there's, like, when you think there might be
the
money
card's
inside
so
it.
Nice.
Oh, and it falls out. So I'm being very careful to pinch it together so that not only does the money not fall out and I can act surprised, but also like I can sort of pretend that I don't even care that it's not. Or that it is or isn't in there. It's like Schrodinger's birthday card.
Yeah.
Like I don't care. So I'm
it's
just holding
not money.
Carefully.
That's an expensive card, Ashton. I owe you a quid.
It's all right.
£2.
I had to go to the Sainsbury's. It was the only shop I passed on my way.
The message inside this card reads, thinking of you.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Okay. With sympathy. Oh. Okay. I'll read the card.
There were two options. I think we went with the superior
one. I'll read the card first. Dear Ben, happy birthday, thinking of you. And then it says, and your lost youth. Lots of love, Peter and Ashton, Keys, Keys. Thank you very much
no
for
No problem.
Card.
You're welcome.
But it's not the only card that's in there.
No, it's no.
Now, for a brief, like, second, I'm thinking, like, maybe less than half a second, I thought, have these lunatics spent £200 on an extremely rare Pokemon card?
The well, yeah, is, we have.
The answer is, of course, no. I've got a Pokemon card that... it's a protective binder.
It's not going to translate very well on camera.
That encases the Pokemon card for thick Charizard.
Yes.
Two C's.
Thick with two C's.
Yeah.
And take him out. You're not going to be able to see it on
Maybe
on
we'll
camera.
Get Kieran to put a picture up.
Yeah. It's the usual Charizard sort of from the back, but he's got a lot of cake going on
and
in
also
his bum area.
His previous generations.
Yeah,
also.
It says evolves from thick Charmander.
Yeah, evolves from thick Charmeleon, and there's a little picture of thick Charmeleon.
Yeah.
Thick Pokemon width, TH feet, and then IC inches. Weight, MYB. What does that mean?
Mind your business.
Mind your business. Okay. Thick Pokemon power, feel the burn. As often as you like during your turn. Okay, this is just a regular thing. Oh, this power can't be used if Thick Blastoise is asleep.
I don't know why it says Blastoise. Is that right?
I don't know. I think it might have been copied from another one.
Yeah,
perhaps.
From like a Thick Blastoise card. Except we couldn't see Blastoise as an option. No. There was Thick Pikachu.
Yeah, and Thick Charizard. But his special ability is firing.
Firing, yeah.
Like after you've had a spicy meal.
Yeah. Spits fire hot enough to shelter you from the storm. Known to unintentionally cause cheek friction fires. Excellent.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
You know me You're too welcome. Well. I'm going to put it back in its protective sleeve.
We didn't feel right buying Thick Pikachu because it just... Pikachu has sort of the innocence of a child about him or her. And we thought, seems strange to... are you going to...
I'm going to attempt to do zoom.
That's a good idea.
Hang on.
And a fall.
Down. Ooh,
oh, nice.
There he is. You see that?
Yeah.
Is it good?
Thick Charizard.
Tilt it back and forwards a bit, Ashton. Get some glint.
Oh, look at the
shiny.
Lenticular.
Yeah. It's a shiny, one. Yeah, there you go.
Hollow foil. Amazing.
Amazing.
Wow. Thank you, guys.
No problem, Ben. We thought you'd like this.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
I do. I like it a lot.
And then maybe next birthday, you could have Thick Pikachu. And we can get you a whole thick starter.
I'm pretty sure owning Thick Pikachu can get you arrested. It made me feel really uncomfortable.
I've got to collect them all now.
Yeah.
I wanted to get you both, but Peter was like, I really don't want to get the Pikachu. So,
it seemed wrong.
Yeah.
Deeply, profoundly upset.
But by the sound of that, maybe there was at least at one time a Thick Blastoise.
Maybe.
I'd like to see that.
Potentially.
Too.
Who knows? Well, thank you, guys.
No
thank
problem.
You very much.
You're welcome.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And thank you to everyone who wished me happy birthday on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. We're not here to talk about my birthday, though.
No.
We're here to talk about video games. And in particular, right now, we need to talk about this week's amazing sponsor, which is Real.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you about it right now. New video game coming out. Everybody loves chicken, except vegans and vegetarians. What is the best marriage that could be made between chicken and video games? Well, I hear you, and I'm going to answer that question right now because this specifically...
Oh, I see what you're talking about now.
It is, of course, the partnership between Nando's and Diablo 4, and they've partnered up to create Nando's Diablo 4 hot sauce.
Right.
For all of your delicious chicken.
Well, did you see that...
So that makes more sense than their current collaboration with KFC.
I was going to say, in the weird news, they are collaborating with KFC.
Yeah, did you not know?
Diablo 4?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Did you not know?
I genuinely didn't know that.
One of the weird news submissions.
Because people were going mad on Facebook, because people on Facebook are insane.
Yeah,
because they were like, KFC supports the devil, because obviously it's Diablo and she's a devil. And
so how have they partnered? Is it just a promotional thing?
Yeah.
Is it like a Diablo meal?
Wait, all of their like...
I don't know. I didn't even read the article.
I think all of their like packaging and stuff is like Diablo themed.
Oh, what the hell? That... Parallel invention. I'm at least as clever. It's like the flipping Simpsons Tears of the Kingdom meme all over again.
Yeah.
I'm at least as clever as the funniest person in the room.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm taking away from that.
But I think
it's
Nando's
not real.
Would make more sense.
Well, it is real. That's the thing.
My one isn't real.
When you were like, oh, it is real. And then you were talking about chicken. I was like, are you just going to talk about that? Are we actually sponsored
by the KFC as well?
Yeah,
I had
that
no idea.
Crazy.
I would have lost my mind.
Nando's Diablo 4 hot sauce is not real, but apparently it kind of is with KFC.
You could also do
chicken.
A Burger King Diablo Whopper.
Oh my God.
Or, no, that's the other option.
Legend of Zelda, Burgers of the Kingdom.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're not sponsored by that or that. We are sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month, you can submit questions to this podcast. It's a flipping tough time out there at the moment financially for a lot of folks. So if you're supporting us over there right now, we want to say thank you very, very much. Yeah, we appreciate you. You can submit questions. They're usually, though, we're now asking for sort of things that are happening, contemporary things that are happening in the industry, so we can talk about newsy stuff, just like Richard Major. But before you get there, I also want to say triplejump.mp/careers. That's a secret second sponsor. We are currently looking for a freelance writer, so head over there if you want to throw your hat into the ring.
Yeah.
triplejump.mp/careers. Just like
Richard Major, who asked or said, depending on whether this first sentence ends with a question mark, all right, PA, no standout must-play PSVR 2 games in last week's showcase. Nothing to the same level as Horizon. they've already given up on it, right? Amazingly disrespectful to those who've bought one for £550. What do you think? Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Richard.
I would say it might be a bit going a bit far to say they've given up on it. I think, like, I agree that at the moment, if you've bought one, you would be very well justified in being disappointed and feeling like, why are you not making, like, serious stuff for this thing? So, yeah, certainly if you're a PSVR 2 owner, you're probably, you know, hoping for some kind of big announcement at the latest showcase. And there wasn't really one.
No.
There was some VR stuff there, no question, but no kind of amazing standout thing that gets you excited. But then, in a sense, that's sort of VR all over, isn't it? There have been a few big, like, super important VR games, Half-Life Alyx, arguably, like, something like Beat Saber,
Bone you could Works say. Is also a pretty popular
yeah.
one.
So, you know, there have been some really big VR games, but they don't come round as often, whether you're talking about PSVR or, you know, Oculus or something else. They don't come round as often as the big standout console games or PC games, I would say. So perhaps it's proportional. I mean, I would still say it's probably slightly out of proportion in the sense that, yeah, it would have been nice to have had something from PlayStation by now that was a bit more exciting. But I think it should hopefully be more of a case of watch this space, and hopefully they're being a bit slow, and yeah, they're not, like, properly kind of serving the people who have spent all that money on their hardware, but it doesn't mean to say necessarily they've given up on it. They could have done, but I hope that they haven't.
There's definitely a feeling, I think, of, like, just general kind of not trusting Sony a bit with PSVR 2, in the sense of, like, they have a track record of, look at this new thing we've made. We're bored of it now.
Yeah.
We don't want to do anything
with
that
anymore. It didn't sell 10 billion.
They certainly have previous. Yeah.
So we're not going to make any games for that. And I do feel like potentially with this, they've got a bit of groundwork to make up in terms of, like, the VR space and the amount of games that are out there for other devices. When you've got things like the Quest and other like PC-based VR game, VR headsets, you've got an entire world of Steam VR games. Admittedly, some of them, total trash, but a big portion of them that are very popular among VR fans are really well made, or at least have a decent story or a good backing behind them in terms of, like, gameplay. So where you've got this kind of, like, diverse group of people making games for these other sets of headsets, Sony have only really got what are being made for them to go out on their headset. Like, the fact that Beat Saber is still, like, not out on the PSVR 2 when it was, like, a launch title for the Quest or whatever. It is interesting that it's still the kind of, like, guys, look what we've got now. We've got this now. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, that was one of the big things. Like, yeah. Beat Saber, what? You mean that game from many years ago?
It was on the first PSVR.
Yeah, and a lot of the other games that they kind of announced were, like, not, like you say, anything stand out. They weren't really memorable. There was, like, this one, you throw boxes at people. This one, you shoot people. I can't even really remember what they were at
this point. The biggest one was Resident Evil.
Yeah.
But, yeah, all the others were kind of, just sort of VR.
And Resident Evil isn't a game that's exclusive to PSVR in the sense that, like, if you haven't got the VR headset, you can't play it elsewhere. Obviously, you can't play it in VR, but you can play it on lots of other places. So I don't feel like they've given up on it. However, I do feel like if I was an owner of a PSVR 2, I would feel a bit shafted in the sense that I don't feel like I've got much to play. Like, we considered swapping over to, well, getting a PSVR 2 instead of, like, selling our old Quest, because we were like, well, you know, let's upgrade the hardware, let's see what they've got. But it's just not compatible with half the games that we already own. So why would we get it? And also, there's just not really that much out there that are interesting. The only selling point I feel like they've got so far is Horizon Call of the Mountain. And even that, like, people have just said it's just a tech demo. So, you know, it's not that interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think they've given up on it, but I do think that I don't trust them with it. And I also think that they need to bring in the game. Like, come on. Where is it, Sony?
Yeah.
Where's the game?
Put some effort in and get some good games on it, please.
I asked my friend, who is one of the six people in the world who owns a PSVR 2, if he was disappointed by the showcase. I asked him, what do you make of the lack of killer PSVR 2 apps shown at the PS showcase? And he said, Beat Saber is so good, it doesn't really matter. Puzzling Places, which is the game that you played, where you have to rotate like geographical locations and fit them together into like a 3D puzzle.
Right.
Puzzling Places is the secret killer app anyway. I think he's being facetious and unhelpful there. If there's nothing I want to play, then that will always be the perfect choice. I've still not completed Horizon. And then he puts a snoring emoji. I said, fair enough. Do you not yearn for first-party support? Or is it more about the newer technology allowing you to better experience the games you already enjoy that's more important? He said, first-party stuff will always be token tech demos with cameos from your favorite PlayStation heroes. Mm. The best games come from devs who work purely with VR. Saying that, where the flip was Team Asobi? That's a fair point. Where is Astro Boy? Astrobot? Yeah. While the new tech is incredible in comparison, even average tech is leaps and bounds ahead of the glowing dildos that lose all tracking when you turn sideways. He's, of course, talking about the Move controllers from the first PSVR. So he didn't seem that fussed, but it's more seemingly that he wanted to know where Team Asobi was.
Mm.
I think that's a fair point. But also, playing devil's advocate, I haven't had a chance to talk about this, the PlayStation showcase from last week yet, but that was like a real confidence killer, I think, across the board. And everyone was let down by the, especially first-party games that were shown there. So the lack of PSVR exclusives or big PSVR titles shown at the showcase is not necessarily indicative of their future plans for PSVR 2 because they dropped the ball across the board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just PSVR 2 that was lacking. It was also PS5. So there's a good chance that there is stuff coming that we don't know about that, you know, it was just a bad showcase, basically.
People were very upset with us last week because they didn't think we were mean enough about
it. Oh, really?
I thought we basically came to the conclusion that it was fine. Like, it was just fine in the sense of, like, it wasn't great. It wasn't that exciting.
Ashton, there are no shades of grey on the internet.
No, there are not.
You must either love it or it is the worst thing.
Very aggressively hateful.
I didn't know that people thought that. I mean,
just be a PlayStation podcast already.
I didn't come out of it like...
Shut up, man.
I didn't come out of it thinking like, that was terrible. I thought it was like completely uninteresting and unexciting.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, I wasn't like mad. So sorry that I wasn't cross, but just thought, oh, that was a bit boring. That wasn't what I wanted to see. But
yeah.
It wasn't even good or bad enough to form an emotion for
that's
us.
That's how fine it was. Plain it was.
I was disappointed by the showcase, like a lot of people. But I think, as you guys have said, realistically, the soft initial sales of the PSVR 2 are probably going to mean that any big future plans they have for it are certainly being put on the back burner. But that doesn't mean that stuff isn't in progress at the moment that we just don't know about.
But they didn't give it anything. Like, they didn't give the PSVR 2 anything to springboard off of. They have, like, we've got a Horizon game, we've got an Octopus game, and some other games later, if you fancy them, but you're just going to have to pay them.
You have to
them.
Buy the thing first.
You have to buy it first, and then we promise these games will come later. They didn't give the PSVR 2 anything to springboard off of, so most people were like, I'm not going to buy this until there's games for it. I'm not going to buy this until there's a substantial enough library that I feel like it is worth spending £550 on top of my £500 PlayStation and your £80 games that you charge me for.
And Sony, you're probably thinking, well, we're not going to make games for it until you buy it. And we know that we're going to be able to sell these games. So it's just a Mexican standoff.
It's a rubbish stalemate where nobody wins.
It is.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's a real shame. And I do feel for PSVR 2 early adopters. I mean, as in the case with my friend, he's perfectly satisfied with the games he's got and he's excited to play Beat Saber because that's kind of all he wants out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly for those of us who are on the outside, who I bought PSVR 1 and I would be interested in buying PSVR 2 if I thought it had a big future, but I've never thought that. And the fact that the showcase was disappointing for a variety of reasons aside, it didn't do anything to give me any confidence that there's going to be anything big coming for PSVR 2 anytime soon.
No. No, I agree. There's nothing that's going to make people change to PlayStation VR 2. People aren't going to be like, well, I'm going to get rid of my Quest that I can play a bunch of games on or my other various brands of VR headset, and I'm going to play VR 2 because it's going to be amazing and there's loads of games for it. There's nothing that makes me want to switch. In the same way, like consoles, things of like right now, there's nothing that makes people want to switch to Xbox. There's nothing that makes people want to switch over to PSVR 2 because it's just, you know, nothing. It's a nothing headset.
Yeah. It's very impressive, technically. Mm-hmm. I had a fantastic time using it. I think it's a really good headset. Yeah. But it's expensive and I'm not going to play it very often anyway, even if there were loads of good games, and there aren't. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Time is running out already. It's not even been a year. Mm-hmm. So we will have to watch that one and see. It's time for a section that I think you started last week when I wasn't here because I don't know what this is.
Because you were a bit like vocally didn't want to make a change to the podcast. So we were like, well, we'll try it while you weren't here.
I said, keep things the same forever.
Yeah, exactly.
But we think it went well.
Yeah, so. We think it went well. So it's called What We Playing.
Oh. What We Playing time. Time to talk about the games what we've been playing. Peter Austin.
I've played one game a lot this week that I didn't expect I would be playing a lot of, and it was...
Is it not Jedi Survivor?
It's not Jedi Survivor, because I spent that much time playing something else.
Mm-hmm. Did you buy Jedi Survivor?
Yeah, I bought it. Ooh. I had it even in time for the previous podcast.
Okay.
And last week, it was just that I'd not really had enough time to sit down and have like a proper session with it. Mm. I just had like little bits of time, so I played other things. This week, I probably would have been able to sit down and play Jedi Survivor, but something else like just come and like made me play that instead.
Okay,
which was Lego 2K
Drive.
I was
going to say, is it Lego 2K Drive?
How did you find that?
I found it surprisingly good. Okay. Yeah, I knew it would be. I expected it to be good, at least fine, if not quite good.
Yeah,
but I really just had a lot of fun with it. It's just it's a fun world. It's it's got a lot of like Lego humor, you know, kind of the Lego movie style.
So does it have like a story?
Yeah, it's got a little story to it, which I think I've pretty much finished now. There's a bit of a grind to it to get through, like from one event to the next, and like there's different worlds that you eventually unlock. And like the one thing that I was a bit disappointed by was that I think there are four worlds in total, unless I'm about to unlock like a special one at the end of the game or something. But the first one is very much a sort of green hill zone because it's the first world, obviously. And then the second one is in like a sort of a canyon. And I was thinking, oh, this is going to be like Wild West themed or something, because there's all sorts of like, there's like pirates and skeletons and stuff all over the races and things. And it wasn't actually quite Wild West themed. It was more sort of modern, like roadside diner town, like canyon kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, maybe the other worlds are going to be a bit more themey and a bit more like wacky. The third one was just a kind of a, it was like the Rocky Mountains or something. And then the fourth one was a bit more like fun and wacky, which was like a spooky world.
Mm.
But and then I think that's it. So I kind of expected to be like, you know, a pirate world and a jungle one and an ice world and stuff, and there wasn't. But it's fine. There's still like a lot of character and charm elsewhere in the game. But although I have spent many hours playing it this week, only some of those hours have been spent actually driving around and doing stuff, because it has like a car builder thing.
Okay.
And I just got very obsessed.
What have you built? A cool car, or are you trying to recreate something?
No, just like a kind of a cool car, like making it up as I go. Okay. I've done a couple of them now, but I mean, you can do like just some really strange things. Like you unlock cars as well as you go. That are kind of pre-made, and you can edit them if you want to. And there's like a big like burger with wheels on.
Sick.
And like kind of horse carriages and things, and yeah, all sorts of strange things. But so I really got quite obsessed with building. It's a bit like when I used to play Kingdom Hearts, I would build gummy ships for like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then be like, oh yeah, hang on, I'm meant to be like doing an adventure here.
Are you able to share or download them, or is it just for you?
I imagine so. I've not actually really tried that, but yeah, I would suspect, because it has obviously like big online multiplayer component, which I've not really delved into, but yeah, I suspect you can share stuff around.
Nice.
So just spent loads of time playing that and like building cars and stuff. Mm. And so I do keep thinking like I should play that Star Wars game. I am supposed to like that franchise. It is meant to be one of my things.
Mm.
I've just still not got around to it, but I think, as I say, I think I've pretty much finished, not 100%ed, but I think I've nearly got to the end of the story of Lego 2K Drive, so probably Star Wars next time, but we'll see. I'll be playing something else probably. I've been playing Cheer this week. Never mind Star Wars. But that's all I've played. Been obsessing over Little Bricks.
Nice. Little Brickham.
Little Brickham. I finished Jedi Survivor at the weekend. I haven't got all of the trophies, mainly because one of them is bugged and I can't finish it.
It's still bugged, yeah.
The bounty one. So you know, you have to do all the bounties.
Yeah.
There's this bug that if you get a certain bounty at a certain point, that it's meant to, so the bounty meant to come at the end,
right,
but if you get given it midway through and you've like, she won't give you any more bounties.
Oh, no.
So I finished the story and then I was like, I'll go back and do everything. And then MB told me we can't finish the game because of this.
They're aware of it, apparently.
Yeah, they are. So they should hopefully fix it soon. And also some of the trophies I categorically CBA to do because they're like combat ones. I just can't be asked.
Yeah.
So
those were actually pretty simple, most of them.
But. Yeah. I'm lazy. That's fine. I don't want to do them.
Did you go back into Disney Dreamlight Valley and pick up 30 flowers?
I have not been back into Disney Dreamlight Valley. Sassy. Keep that to yourself.
I won't.
But yeah, I've really enjoyed that game. I really like the story. I thought I'd seen a spoiler, which kind of was, but I thought it was going a completely different route than what it did go down. So I was still surprised by the story, and that was great. Mm-hmm. I thought that the kind of like towards the end of the game's like mechanics that was introduced and like the way that the story went was really interesting. And yeah, I thought it was great. I think that the game is definitely a step up from the first game. I think that it, like you said, it improves on everything that the first game did. And I think it's neat.
Yes, I also think it's neat.
Yeah.
Do you think Peter will think it's neat?
I think Peter will think it's neat. I think you will enjoy it. I also played and finished Ravenlock, which is on Xbox Game Pass. Pretty short game, that one. But, you know, fun enough. I'm going to do a sneeze. No, I'm not. It's gone now.
God's sake.
Sorry. Yeah, and that's like an Alice in Wonderland kind of pixely little adventure. It's pretty nice. Definitely one like to play either if you can't be bothered to play anything else and it's just like a little brain off, press square to do damage situation. Mm. Or if you have a child, they might like this game if you play it with them. There's a couple of like bosses that you might need to help them with, but most of the time, they can probably figure out themselves. And lastly, I played some After Us last night, which is a game that came out last month. And it's like a post-human, it's a commentary on pollution and the way that humans are affecting the world.
Reminded me a lot of Flower.
Yes.
In the because it was shown at some sort of showcase.
Yeah, it was shown, I think, at the Game Awards or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I think that must have been. I remember seeing it and thinking that looks a lot like Flower, and I love the look of that.
It's kind of got like Little Nightmares vibes to some of the enemies and some of the kind of like worlds that you're in. Essentially, the premise is that you play this little character called Gaia, and she's been tasked by Mother Earth to go onto Earth and rescue the spirits of all the animals that have died, basically, because Mother Earth has put all the last of her life energy into these spirits and they've been sent down to Earth. So you go back down to a planet that is like a kind of stylized version of a post-apocalyptic world. There's like all these cars that are kind of floating and broken up roads and stuff. You get attacked by like plastic bags and there's like oil slicks that you can kind of, they've got this power where you do like a big burst of light and it turns everything into like grass and flowers and stuff, and you can get rid of oil slicks. And yeah, it's just really nice. It's really pretty. I've had a couple issues with stuttering when it saves. It'll just kind of like completely stop whenever it's trying to do a save sometimes if it's in like a big area. And then it'll go back to normal. I also think that they've put too much to do with the R2 button, but that's just like traversal in terms of it's sprint, it's dash, it's wall run, it's zip line, and I'm trying to get it to do something else and it's doing the other thing because it's like this button does so many things. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. James is going to play it on stream this week, I believe. So check that out on the VODs channel because I think it's a very pretty game and so far I'm really enjoying it. So
amazing.
Yeah. Nice. I think you would enjoy it as well.
Yeah,
well,
I've been tempted by it. It's sort of been in the back of my... It's been on my radar, but there's always so much to play. But
there
yeah.
is, yeah.
Not spent any more money on Project Makeover this week?
I haven't, no. The money I spent has finished now.
What did you use it on? Did you use it
I used it on the, like, a monthly, like...
The Battle Pass.
Oh, was this when you... Were you here for this? I think Ashton accidentally spent money.
Yeah, I tried to use my credit and it accidentally used my actual money instead. So...
Streak is over.
Yeah. But hey, damn. I'm almost at level 5,000 now. So
no one's ever reached level 5,000 in any game.
What does that
ever.
Even mean?
The thing
at that
is,
point?
Also, like, I can see how many makeovers I've got left, and I'm now like two away from the thing that says more coming soon.
Oh, no. So, how many makeovers can you do a day?
Well, it's up to it. You can play for as many lives as you've got, and then you can do.
How long does a makeover take?
Like a few weeks, depending on how many levels you do. So it takes a little while.
Okay, so it does take a while.
Yeah. Right, you go and then I'll show you it.
Okay, I thought, because if it was going to take no time at all, I thought maybe you could complete the two makeovers now and show everyone the game over screen.
No, I can't.
Finished makeovers.
No, that's a shame. I can't do that right now. Otherwise, okay. I would.
More coming soon.
Yeah.
So what are you doing? Explain to
I'm just was going to... I can't. I'm not doing press claim because I get 30 minutes of free lives and I'm going to
Okay, well, you don't want to waste the 30 minutes of free lives. We'll lose Ashton for half an hour.
Yeah, so
I have only been playing Tears of the Kingdom. Mm-hmm. I took the beautiful Office OLED Switch out with me. And when I came back last night, I transferred my save data from the Office Switch to my Switch / Peter's Switch. And the difference between the two, when you hold the two side by side, it's like there's a... Even just screen size, it feels like the screen takes up more of the Switch on the OLED one. I took that.
It does.
I went on...
It does.
Yeah, sure. And that's cool, and I like that. And that was especially useful because I was going to be playing in handheld mode pretty much the entire time I was away. Mm-hmm. I went on holiday to French France, and I fortunately did not have to drive, which meant that I could sit in the back and play Switch for like...
I wish I could do that. If
for
I
like
drive,
6 or 7 hours.
And I look at anything, I'll just vomit.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
I can do anything in the back of the car. I'm sick as hell. So I managed to... I borrowed Andrew from Cultaholic's Switch Pro controller. And then I... You know the little kickstand at the back, which I think it's good that I took the OLED Switch because it's got a thicker
it's
one
a bigger
that goes
one.
Along the whole thing. I was able to suspend that from the headrest of the car seat in front of me and play...
If you did that with the other one, it would have snapped off.
It would have snapped,
away.
Yeah. I was able to play Zelda the entire time. There was a bit of screen glare, and in darker areas, I really struggled. But that moment was sort of like, oh man, the Switch is... This is pretty cool. I like that I can do this and just play Zelda in the car, not even in handheld mode, but also sort of in a, you know, a hybrid mode that I've invented myself between docked and handheld.
Are you enjoying the game?
I am enjoying the game. I would say that it's about 70% I think this game is amazing and magical, and 30% this is the most maddening experience I've ever had in any video game in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Just like dying in one hit or... really obtuse, strange puzzles that I just can't get my head around. And then the solution is like stupidly simple and I'm massively overthinking it, you know, just like over engineering solutions to stuff. So that's more a me problem than the game. I run out of arrows all the time still, which is very frustrating, but it's incredible. And I've played a great deal of it. I've done all of the sky towers. So I've unlocked all the map. I've fully upgraded my stamina. I've got a lot of hearts now. I think I'm most of the way through the game. I want to say I'm close to the end now. So I'll be able to hopefully report back on that next week if I've managed to finish it. But it's a very special game. One thing though, why do a lot of the characters when they're talking sound like they're just making sex noises? It's really off-putting and very strange and also a bit embarrassing too, because several people walked in while I was talking to a vendor and she would go, ah, ooh, but like with the sexiness dial cranked up to 11. And they would walk in and go, what are you playing? Like, it's Zelda. Like, they don't actually... Sometimes they talk in full sentences, but sometimes they just sort of grunt. But like, some people's grunts are way sexier than other people's grunts. And it's like, how did you guys... surely you saw this and were just like, that's fine. Or that'd be funny.
Yeah.
Let's do that. I don't know how they got away with that. I find it a bit humiliating to play Zelda in public because I feel like I'm going to be judged. But I have played an awful lot of it and I'm liking it a lot. So that's all I've played. Basically.
Good. I'm glad. Ben's been playing through Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
He used a guide because he was like, I just need some help as to what I'm supposed to do at the beginning.
Hey, life's too short with some of these games that don't give you specific direction.
Yeah.
And it's just like, right, I do not have time. At least a guide will tell me which direction to walk in.
Because he was like, at the beginning of the game, I just felt so aimless. So he's been really enjoying Breath of the Wild now playing with a guide. So maybe I'm going to have to do that because I do feel FOMO that everyone's enjoying Tears of the Kingdom. So maybe I'll have to play Breath of the Wild.
I didn't play Breath of the Wild, and I'm really enjoying Tears of the Kingdom regardless. So maybe
do you know what's going on?
I think the story's really good, and it's explained. But I'm bumping into characters. I think I've met all the major ones now, who say, Link, it's you! And I'm like, And you are.
It's so nice to see.
So nice to see you as
you
well.
You as well from that time we've met before.
But Nintendo were like, everyone played the first game.
Everyone knows who the bird guy is. I think it's self-explanatory enough where maybe the story in the first game or the, you know, obviously you go on these grand adventures with these characters, but I feel like the interactions maybe were limited enough where they don't have hugely complex backstories that you need to be aware of. So you're probably going to be fine. But the story through this one, I'm finding compelling. Regardless of, you know, my lack of experience with the first game, I'm invested in what's going on. So you probably could save yourself a full playthrough of one of the best games of all time, you know, if you want to do that. That's
not totally worth playing it, is it?
No, it's a bit rubbish, isn't it? It's rubbish games. Tears of the Kingdom. Very good. Very good. But also very annoying, but mostly very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, time for question two now.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not, is it?
Time for Review Corner.
Sorry, no one told me that before I did this.
Yeah, it's not on the notes.
No.
It's time for Review Corner now. Welcome, everybody, to Review Corner. I'm joined with the Jenkmeister, James Jenkins.
Wow, what an intro. Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Love that.
And we want to talk about a game that I feel like no one's been talking about, a game that I feel
under
like...
Under the radar, I think.
It's going quite under the radar. Mm. And that is, of course, Lord of the Rings. Gollum.
That's right. It's
straight up tens across the board.
Yeah, I mean, critical reception has been unprecedented.
It's definitely our game of the year. But we've both played about a similar amount.
Yeah, we've both played a bit on stream.
And we could not be forced outside of that to play much more.
Well, yeah, I also captured footage, and for anybody, you know, viewing on YouTube, viewing a podcast on YouTube, then you can see that lovely footage right now, and it's a sight to behold.
Doesn't it look good?
I suppose we should say, first of all, thank you to Daedalic Entertainment and Nacon for providing the code.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't want to just go in immediately and just slate it wholesale.
We went into this.
Yeah.
We're like fully kind of... We'd only seen a few reviews at the time when we started playing it.
That's right, yeah.
So we went in with hopes that it's not for them, but maybe it's for us.
I had so many hopes and dreams. I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan.
But just because we got sent it, it doesn't mean we have to pretend it's not objectively bad.
And I think the key point is it's being sold for... So it's on all platforms as well, mm-hmm. if you're interested. And it is being sold at like retail price of £49.99.
Yeah.
And so for that price, you kind of got to look at it and say, man, that is probably not worth the price.
Yeah. With an extra £10, you can afford to get the Elvish.
Oh, that's a whole thing as well, isn't it? Yeah. the Elvish language, emotes, which I actually discovered as well. We'll get into like a bit of what the game's about anyway, but just on this note, I believe the code we were given included the emotes as well. So like I tried them out when I was recording footage, and they're just pointless.
Yeah.
it's just the fly like buzzing around and Gollum like batting at it, and then another one is just like, oh my precious, which is, you know, that's the level of quality impression of Gollum that you'll get from the game as well, by the way. Yeah. But yeah,
so the game itself, you play as Gollum, you've been captured quite early on and taken to prison.
Yes, you've been taken by the bad eyeball on the tower by Sauron.
And you spend the first portion of the game, at least the first 2 and a bit hours, in this prison.
Yeah, and it becomes almost like a chore simulator.
Yes.
It's super bizarre. And so like storyline-wise, I believe it runs parallel to events at the start of like the Fellowship of the Ring, like the first book/film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I believe it's non-canon, but they tried their best to fit it into, you know, what's already there in the storyline. But yeah, you're just captured by Sauron's forces, and you're forced to do a bunch of different chores, and they are very chore-like.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Put pigs in pen and close door behind pigs.
Yes.
Go find the like tags off dead bodies and bring them back.
Yeah.
Make things explode down 3 separate small like tunnels and then come back.
Oh, it's exciting.
So many exciting things. And then you get to do the pig thing again.
Yep.
It's a real treat.
Yeah, I play for it a bit where you're sort of running away from the pigs, and this, you know, it just seems so unforgiving, not very clear, that you had to just run as opposed to stealth around. I don't know. Like, so I should say, good points. I did write down good points trying to find a few good points because, yeah, it's gotten some really bad reviews and I'm like, well, it's still functional, but that's about the only thing I can think of as a good point. It does function as a video game sometimes.
Yeah, the game runs, so...
Yeah, it's so, I mean, it's glitchy. The character animations are all kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Did you notice with the frail man at the start? So like Gollum, for some reason, you know, trying to make friends with people, whatever. Not in his character at all. But mm-hmm. The frail man's beard glitching out, going like, woo, up in the sky.
It defies gravity. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Just the whole sort of character design of Gollum is unusual. But, you know, that would have been forgiven if it was very sort of stylized and quite well done.
Yeah.
Graphically, it looks weird. A lot of, like, shimmering weirdness effects.
Yeah, like a lot of things of, like, if there's a pile of gold, it doesn't just have, like, one light source and a bit of it glistens. It's, like, the whole thing is just, like, the bunch of pixels around the edge are just going crazy and, like... shimmer effect. Also, like, Gollum's facial movements, whenever he speaks, like, he's moved his mouth, but then as soon as he's finished saying his sentence, his pupils go back to tiny and his face just goes back to neutral. Like, it's so jarring. In terms of, like, the gameplay, you're kind of crawling around doing these various tasks at the beginning. Mm. There's parkour where you have to kind of, like, do backwards jumps. And he's very agile, is Gollum.
He is quite agile with the stuff there. But it's also, like, the platforming is super clunky. So you got a bit of platform, you got a bit of stealth. Mm-hmm. And those are two things that, you know, climbing and sneaking around are kind of Gollum's thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that felt weird, that it's just a by the numbers sort of platformer of, like, find the ledges that look slightly climbable and then do that. You can't climb everywhere, though. Oh, no, that would be bad.
There's also, like, this thing where you can throw a rock to shut a light source off to give yourself a stealth, like, place to go. However, they never make sense where the shadow is going to be, and they'll normally just be a big band of shadow, and if you're in the shadow you're basically invisible. He goes into, like, dark mode and he can just crawl along in this shadow that's, you've turned off a light in the corner and it's just a band of shadow on the other side of the room, and you're like, cool, yeah, that makes sense.
that was bizarre, because the stealth bit, I got stuck, like, a couple of times just on the stealth bit that I was playing for the footage. And, you know, you are in clear view of an orc facing right in front of him, and I didn't realize, like, again, it's not clear whether it may have been user error, I don't know, whether I missed a prompt or something, but it's not clear that you can just hide in those shadows that are only, like, a little bit darker. They're not sort of pitch black, but bam, you're invisible. It's insane. Just the fact that all of these things are meant to be what Gollum is good at. The voice, I think we've touched on as well. Like, yeah, I don't want to sort of slate the voice acting across the board, because I remember from the stream, like, there was a decent impression of Wizard Man. Oh my god, Gandalf. Yes. and it was okay, but it feels very weird that it feels like there are a lot of people who can do really good impressions of Gollum. Like, it's a difficult voice, but there are a lot of people out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels weird that, you know, it steps into that sort of uncanny valley of, like, what Marvel's Avengers was, where it's not clear that you're separating it enough from the source material of, like, you know, well, especially the films that so many people will be, like, familiar with.
Yeah.
And now iconic voice by Andy Serkis. So, like, it's, yeah, you've got that, and it's it's just so off, but it's not clear that that's, you know, the intention. It's like a bad impression, basically. Yeah. It's a shame. But
I think the main issue with the game is that it's just bland. Like, there's nothing special about it. I found myself playing it, like, in, like, the first hour you can kind of laugh at it and you can kind of, like, oh yeah, it's bad but in a fun way. Mm-hmm. Then after a certain point you're like, oh boy, like, it's just bland now. Like, I'm just doing the same things. I'm not really interested in the story.
Yeah.
There's nothing here to entice me to come back, is my feelings about Gollum.
It's a shame.
And obviously, like, I don't have any attachment. I've never watched any of the movies. I've never read any of the books. But I know who Gollum is.
Yeah.
And,
it's iconic.
You know, I feel like that's basically enough for me to be like, understand the basic of his motivations. And I'm already annoyed that I'm still in a prison. Like, I'm annoyed I haven't escaped yet. I feel like it's been 2 hours and I'm already ready to go somewhere else.
As far as I'm aware, like having sort of looked into it, I think that's a good portion of the game as well. Mm-hmm. And apparently at some point you find a lovely little companion bird.
Yes, I have seen that.
Yeah, where it's like, hang on a minute, he eats all kinds of little creatures and critters and stuff. He's not going to make friends with a tiny little baby bird. What?
Yeah.
This is Gollum. He's just, you know, like, yeah, he's got some like, in equal parts, he's like kind of pitiful as well as like, disgusting Gollum sort of thing.
But that's also one of the things is that you can make decisions for Gollum, but we found out that actually it doesn't matter. So no, you can like say like, hide, eat the bug and hide, or continue listening. Yeah. Smeagol wants to continue listening. Gollum wants to eat the bug. Mm. You convince Gollum or Smeagol that you want to eat the bug by doing a weird little mini game of Gollum is hungry. Yeah. And then... And then you get caught either way, and it's a pointless choice.
Yeah.
That I wish never happened, this whole weird little mini game thing that just wastes
the illusion
time.
Of choice, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, again, that seems like a missed opportunity, because that is another, like, I'm glad you brought it up. Like, I completely forgot about that. That's another sort of iconic thing with Gollum versus Smeagol, like this internal strife between the two, because he's so corrupted by the ring. And that could have been an interesting sort of mini game, but no, again, it feels like it just fell flat a bit by the numbers. It doesn't mean anything, doesn't lead to any meaningful like results. No. Yeah, and
it's not like you've gone to Gollum to do this choice. You can't go back now, like that kind of thing. It
yeah, no split.
It's just basically like a little thing of being like, see how Gollum has two personalities? That's about it.
Yeah, remember that. Yeah, remember that thing.
But the producers and the devs have said like, oh yeah, we're going to do our best to fix it. But I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but unless you're going to completely take the game off and then remake the entire game, there's just not a lot they can do to fix this, I don't think.
Yeah.
You can make it run and you can like fix some of the animations and stuff. But realistically, you've built the game now. That game's going to have to stay like that unless you want to make a whole new game. They're not going to fix this in the same way like Cyberpunk, we can fix the bugs. They can't fix Gollum by fixing the bugs.
Yeah, that's it. That's precisely it. Yeah, it's if there's surface level bugs, if it was like riddled with bugs, but there was a good core game underneath, then, you know, you say yes, go for it. And it's very commendable that they're, you know, trying to sort of fix these things. But I think fundamentally it's not great, like at its core. And I was going to say earlier, like it does feel like they built this with another character in mind, maybe like an original character. And then at some point down the line, Gollum got slapped into the middle of it. And they were told, right, okay, make this about Gollum now. And it's weird. It might explain why some of these things are a bit half baked, and you know, and also we should say like the did look into so Daedalic Entertainment. This is not their sort of forte. They're used to doing like more traditional like point and click games, which have scored fairly decently, like around sort of 70%, maybe a bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
Games like Whispering Wild and A New Beginning I've got written down, but yeah. It does feel like they've been taken out of their comfort zone somewhat, but fundamentally, the game, you know, £50 for that game, no.
It's terrible. That's
no,
bad.
No, no.
You should never do that. So there we have it. That's our thoughts on Gollum. As you can tell, we loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's head back over to the podcast.
Excellent. Thank you for having me. Bye.
Well, now it's time, everyone.
Oh, sorry. I was just
I don't care. You never wait for anyone else.
What? I ask you just kidding.
We're in a fight today, okay, because you were mean to me before we started the podcast.
Whatever, Matthews.
Time for question two now. It comes from Chris McVeigh. Hi, Bap. The runaway success of Tears of the Kingdom, as well as recent comments from the dev team, have left some longtime fans concerned about the classic 3D Zelda formula, i.e. Ocarina of Time style, may never be seen again. Are there any games that fundamentally changed the formula of a series you liked, and do you wish the series would reject the change and go back to the old style? Thanks, Chris.
I've got a quote here. I don't know if you guys saw it. This is from the guy,
right?
Where he said the thing,
Johnny Tendo.
John Tendo. No, this is from producer Eiji Aonuma. I believe, in an interview with Game Informer. With Ocarina of Time, I think it's correct to say that it did kind of create a format for a number of titles in the franchise that came after it. But in some ways, that was a little bit restricting for us. We always aimed to give the player freedoms of certain kinds. There were certain things that format didn't really afford in giving people freedom. Of course, the series continued to evolve after Ocarina of Time, but I think it's also fair to say now that we've arrived at Breath of the Wild and the new type of more open play and freedom that it affords. Yeah, I think it's correct to say that it has created a new kind of format for the series to proceed from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I slightly misread the question. I read it as, are there any games that fundamentally change the formula of a series you liked? As in, did the games you liked. Are there any games you liked that fundamentally change the formula of a series?
Yeah.
So I brought along games that changed the formula
and you liked
that I liked.
Oh, okay.
But I have thought of two that I didn't like.
Well, I also misread this question because I thought it was about Zelda for the longest time. Okay. And then I read the end of it and I do have an answer.
I didn't misread the question.
Well, I'll give you the ones that I liked first. We're things that changed it for the better. Not necessarily that the old thing was bad and that, you know, sometimes it's nice to have a branch, a fork in the road, and they're doing both in parallel. But I liked Resident Evil 4 when it changed to 3D and 3D third person and a bit more action-y over the shoulder and stuff. But I also liked Resident Evil 7, where it changed to first person and became a bit more intense again in survival horror and less action-packed. Mm-hmm. So they can sort of do all sorts, Capcom. They do a really good job of various different Resi genres at this point. So like them all. Mm-hmm. Fallout 3, I think, changed it for the better. I didn't play the old ones, but that's kind of the point, is that I wouldn't really have ever played the old Fallout games if they were still making them to this day as a kind of a top-down, you know, almost sort of dungeon crawler style RPG thing. I wouldn't be playing it, but I like the third-person Bethesda style. GTA 3 as well. I did used to have the older games on PC when they were top-down, just like violent Pac-Man. But GTA 3 was, you know, it really set the series on a path that has brought it to where it is now. Mm-hmm. Pretty much like the biggest money spinner going. I mean, it's probably not actually compared to some sort of online games, but yeah, it's certainly a huge one. But a couple of games that changed things that I didn't like. I really didn't like when the third Orcs Must Die game, Orcs Must Die Unchained, became a sort of strange, like third person. It was basically a MOBA, really. There were like lanes where you had to like defend mobs that were moving through, and you were like, there were all these heroes fighting each other. Rubbish. Fortunately, they then went back to the regular like numbered games with Orcs Must Die 3, and that was fine. And what was the other one? Oh yeah, I really enjoyed Warcraft 2 and Warcraft 3. I used to play them a lot on PC. And then World of Warcraft came out, and they will probably never, ever, ever go back to RTS games ever again, because they'll just keep doing World of Warcraft, and then maybe they might do a World of Warcraft 2 one day, I think. So I miss the old Warcraft RTS days, but, you know, there are some other good RTS games out there. And I don't actually play other RTS games now anyway, so maybe I wouldn't still be playing Warcraft, even if they were still releasing the games. But those are some that I did and did not like. Ashton?
I have one that I think, I don't know if it counts as a series, because I think that Switch Sports was bad compared to Wii Sports.
Right.
And I don't know exactly what they did. I can't put my finger on it, but they made it soulless and boring. And that's interesting, considering that Wii Sports is not either of those things, and the Miis are incredibly soulless to look at, you know? Yeah. I don't know.
You didn't like Spocko Square?
Well, no. I didn't like it very much. It wasn't as fun and nice as, you know, the Mii Square.
No, it wasn't at all.
The sports were boring. They weren't very interesting to play. And I just think that Wii Sports was just an elite tier game, and Switch Sports just boring. So let's do more Wii Sports, less Switch Sports if you make another one. Please, Nintendo. You
Should
won't.
You just made it just badly there, or do you think like there was kind of formulaic, like underlying change that...
I think that they took it too seriously.
Right.
I think that they were like, oh yeah, people really like Wii Sports. Let's make a good-ish sports sim.
Right. There were several, there were at least two racket racket and ball games that were practically identical.
Yeah.
They've just added golf. I did play a little bit of golf, actually, and it's just as hard as it was on Wii Sports, where it doesn't really read the sensor correctly.
Yeah. I just think that they took themselves too seriously.
Yeah.
They took away the ability to use Miis in the game, which was the biggest mistake.
You can use Miis in the game, but it defaults to like those lifeless avatars with only like four.
Yeah, because if you wanted more, you had to play online.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, I've never played online. You only get like four hairstyles and stuff. It's kind of
flip
rubbish.
That. Also, I am glad that they are kind of already on their way back to how it used to be, but I think Assassin's Creed Valhalla was a step too far. I liked Origins, which was a big map, but was good, and I just fell off Valhalla because it was too big, and I just felt like there was just aimless wandering around for so much longer than there was in things like Valhalla. And I do like that we're kind of going back, hopefully, from what they've said to their origins of, you know, like Brotherhood in the original Assassin's Creed games, which I really enjoyed. So hopefully we're heading back in that direction now. We've done the whole, this game's ginormous, it's the entirety of England. And now we can do a nice smaller thing.
Yes.
That would be nice.
One or two cities.
Yes, exactly. Just one nice city. That would be great.
Well,
thanks so much.
I did see people complaining this morning on Twitter saying the historical accuracy seems to be a bit down. You know, they're quite famous for, you know, really doing amazing recreations. They're used in like history classes and stuff sometimes, aren't they? And people are saying that the cities look very bland and like grey when apparently historically they were like covered with like color and paint and artwork and stuff and apparently that's a complaint that's happening right now.
And darn.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully that's addressed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I thought this question was about Zelda to begin with,
right?
So which is why I included the quote. So I would just to address that quickly. I personally would prefer that these games be scaled back slightly in scope, because as much as I've enjoyed Tears of the Kingdom, I think by playing it as much as I have, and hopefully when I finish it, maybe my opinion will be different, but I think I've pretty much confirmed that while I can fully appreciate, much like with Breath of the Wild from a distance, that these games are incredible and really well put together, they're not really for me, just because they are too open and they take up, it's not even necessarily about taking up too much of my time, it's more that I do feel a bit aimless sometimes in the game. I'm not really sure what to do, and that is super appealing to some people. But if there were a simpler version of Zelda, as it was seemingly, having not played them, then that would probably be preferable for me. But you have to imagine that even if these huge games continue, that there will be scope for smaller interstitial experiences between them that perhaps are more in line with classic Zelda games. You would hope anyway, given the massive success of Tears of the Kingdom and of Breath of the Wild, that Zelda as a brand has never been bigger. So why wouldn't you want to squeeze out more smaller games if you can along the way? Now, in terms of games, what changed, what I wasn't a huge fan of, I'm going to target Naughty Dog here,
right?
Because Uncharted 4, Uncharted Lost Legacy, and The Last of Us Part 2 all had at least a little bit of the game that was open.
Yeah.
And you could explore it at your leisure, and there were objectives to complete within there, and you had some kind of vehicle to get around. I think it was a horse in The Last of Us and a Jeep in Uncharted. And I fully appreciate what they were trying to do there and give it a little bit of variety. But for me, when I got to those sections, my heart sort of sank a bit, because I just thought, this is not really what I come for. I come to Uncharted or Naughty Dog games in general for. I much prefer, as often as this is praised as it is, what am I trying to say? It's praised as much as it's criticized, it feels like, on the internet. But I much prefer the more linear aspects to Uncharted's game, Naughty Dog's games, the way they funnel you through these action-packed narrative sections, and also bits that aren't so action-packed, but they still have a start point and a very clear end point where you're sort of, even if they give you a path through it, you know, you can go through the destroyed building, or you can walk down the center of the road. You are still ultimately going to the end of the street. That's what I prefer from these games. And they didn't negatively impact the experience, but it did sort of set off kind of alarm bells in my head, where I thought, oh my goodness, they're going to make an entire game like this at some point, and I'm not going to like it, and that's going to suck, because that's not what I want Naughty Dog to make. But that was just a small thing.
Especially when, I think it was Lost Legacy, there was a bit where you're in the Jeep and there were like, you're in this big open area and there were, I think, three towers that you had to hit as the main objective. You had to go to each one. But then there were like two other smaller buildings that like they were also sort of saying, oh, and look over there, that might be worth checking out. And probably because there were just some relics in there or something. And at least if you get to an area and it's like, right, there's three towers, you have to hit all three to progress the story. Do it in whatever order you want, then you still essentially have an object, like almost a linear objective, just in a different order. But when there's also then extra bits, you're like, do I do that? Do I not? What if I accidentally do that when I think I'm going to a tower, but it's actually the temple? And
I had this a lot in Tears of the Kingdom, where I wander into a settlement as part of the main quest, and I walk directly past six or seven people with exclamation marks above their head, because I'm like, I cannot be distracted or I will never finish this
Help
game.
Help me, my child's missing. Help me.
Yeah,
I'm
literally,
not
gone past people who said, I wonder where she is. I hope she's okay. And I'm just like,
I don't care.
I've got to go and see the chief, sorry.
Tell someone who cares.
Yeah,
homie.
There's loads of people around. Ask them. I'm saving the world. I don't have time for this.
I can't be everybody's hero.
But ultimately, that's a minor point that I've raised there. Like, it didn't negatively impact the experience for me, but it's just a small thing that it's a change that I wasn't a huge fan of necessarily.
Yeah, I wouldn't miss it if they got rid of it.
It's time for something. A little bit.
Strange.
A bit peculiar.
Weird news.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's weird news time, everybody. Time for some weird video game news. Remember, if you'd like to submit weird video game news, you can do so on social media platforms. Alternatively, if you would like an actual shout out here, guaranteed, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where at a certain tier, you can become a podcast producer. Just like
Nathan,
G.Y. Goliath,
Nicole Hansen,
Duncan Wilson,
Katie Garrett /Jared,
Ellie Nicholas,
Nexus Polaris,
Meldy L1A,
Blake Thomas,
and Gabrielle Philippine.
Thank you, podcast producers.
Thank you so much.
You're all wonderful people.
You are.
I've got a weird news here that was submitted by, I think, John Gray. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's according to Games Radar, written by Hiron Cryer, who says, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom fan takes up job at a delivery company to play the game early, gets busted by their mom.
Oh, classic.
Mom, put down the camera.
Classic.
Subheading, another employee stole Zelda-related accessories.
Nightmare.
Two Japanese workers allegedly infiltrated a delivery company to steal copies of The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom before launch.
No.
As originally reported by Japanese publication Bunshun and translated by Automaton Media, two Japanese youths reportedly started working at an Amazon subcontractor earlier this year. The pair started working at the delivery company a month before Tears of the Kingdom launched as part of a plan to steal and play the game before launch on May the 12th.
That is a long con.
I love that. That is, apart from it being a criminal enterprise, that is proper sort of, okay, well, if you distract the shopkeeper, I'm going to take a Mars bar.
Yeah.
But with Zelda.
How like excited and obsessed do you have to be for the game to take up a job and then break the law to play it?
They
probably
definitely could
a week early at most.
They could have bought it.
That's the thing as well. Like, how early is it going to be realistically sent out?
I don't know. Yeah, probably a week or no more than that. Two employees were then meant to assist with the The two employees were then meant to assist with the delivery of copies of Tears of the Kingdom right before launch, but were nowhere to be found.
Ooh.
A boss at the company then called one of their mothers and was told they were at home playing a game. The game turned out to be Tears of the Kingdom, which they had allegedly stolen from the delivery company. One of the employees then confessed to stealing the game and to it being a deliberate and premeditated act. The other employee, meanwhile, confessed to stealing not just Tears of the Kingdom, but other Zelda products, the special edition Nintendo Switch Pro controller, in order to sell them and net a profit.
Okay, yeah, that's bad. That's
if you just wanted to play the game, that's one thing. But
I was
going to
put it back. I'm just imagining them. Their plan being, I'm going to play it for a week, and then when it comes out, we'll buy one. But then what we need to do is wrap it up in like cling film and then just slip it back into the distribution facility.
I love that they're like, oh, we're missing some copies of Zelda, and also those boys haven't turned up. Excuse me, your son isn't in today. Oh, yes, he's at home playing a game. It's amazing. The employees were then both reportedly fired from their jobs at the subcontractor, which is basically the least you'd expect from this case. Mm. They were also apparently made to reimburse the company for all items they'd stolen while working there, which is the ultimate case of flipping about and finding out.
Yeah, I hope that's it. I know that they did a crime, but I wouldn't want these boys...
They have to pay back money every day for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, well, there's that. Or like, I don't want them to get any kind of record that means they can never get a job again.
It doesn't say how old they were.
Yeah, but they might be like 25.
And so
they
teenagers, wasn't
they just said youths.
I think it said youths.
Oh, okay, well, that's different.
They probably are teenagers.
If they were teenagers, I think it's different.
Yeah.
The article, I will just read this last paragraph because it is quite funny. It's wild that one of the culprits literally just sat at home playing Tears of the Kingdom and hoped their mother wouldn't snitch on them. Mm. They would have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for that pesky mother. Well, probably not, but we can imagine. Mm. Apparently, this sort of thing happens a lot, in Japan at least. An unnamed source at the delivery subcontractor says this often happens with part-time staffers coming and going relatively quickly, which makes it really hard to track down who's stolen what.
Oh, God.
Damn, maybe this pair really would have gotten away with it if not for their mother.
Yeah.
Sounds like they might have done.
Probably would.
Thank you, John, for sending that in.
Thank you, John. Especially if it's, you know, you're working in a place that doesn't put any value on games above any other product.
Yeah.
Like, they care just as much about Zelda going missing as they would a Hoover, for example.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm not
like, really bothered about release dates.
It's not like you're working in a game store or something, are you?
Nice.
And a copy of Zelda goes missing.
It's just the value of the product, and that's it.
I have some news.
Do you, Ashton?
Yeah, it comes from Jonathan Wong on Facebook on comicbook.com by Mark Deschamps. McDonald's reveal playable Tetris Chicken McNugget.
Nice.
Since debuting in Soviet Union in 1985, Tetris has been offered on countless platforms, from PCs to video game consoles. The game's been playable in so many different formats, but the strangest might be a new promotion from McDonald's, the fast food franchise, in case you didn't know what they were.
McDonald's, the fast food
franchise.
Are we going to get
a background on McDonald's now?
Yeah. Is offering a Tetris game shaped like a chicken McNugget. The official Tetris account shared images of the device that comes in a packaged model after an actual chicken McNugget. A package modeled after an actual Chicken McNugget box, as well as McDonald's themed stickers. Unfortunately, there is a catch. The device is currently exclusive to restaurants in China.
Boo!
Do you want to see a picture?
Yes. And all the big boys will be queuing up outside take them from the children.
That is lovely. Is it officially licensed Tetris, or is it just a McDonald's recreation?
Well, it's shared by the Tetris Twitter account, so I would assume.
Is it probably to promote it's a bit late to promote the movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know what that would be.
Just for fun.
Unsurprisingly,
the device found significant interest from Tetris fans. Replies to the tweet are filled with gamers that are jealous that Tetris Chicken McNugget hasn't released outside of China. The version of Tetris playable on the device isn't going to be nearly as deep as the options like Tetris Effect Connected, but it should still make a very cool collector's item. Unless McDonald's and Tetris opt to bring the device to North America. Just North America?
What?
Or the rest of the world? Of course, just North America is the only important bit. Yeah. Fans will have to settle for snagging one on the secondary market. Thankfully, prices are fairly reasonable right now, costing $30 on sites like eBay.
I was just about to look it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That seems like it will be something that if it's still in its box, probably will genuinely be worth some money in some years' time.
Mm.
Brand new, $22.99, free postage. You can buy five And the cost goes down per unit to $18.39.
Wow.
This is a highly, highly affordable collector's item.
I guess if they have made a billion of them, though, then it's never going to be worth that much money.
This guy's got a stockpile of them.
Oh,
Apparently someone was selling one for $10. Then someone put a bid on it for $20. And then they cancelled the listing and listed it as $160.
Classic. Okay. Well, then, if you want a McNugget Tetris toy. They're very affordable right now, so maybe go and get one.
Thanks. Pretty weird. No problem.
I don't need to look at that for my weird news. My weird news is on here, and it was brought by me. Ah. I brought it. Ah. It's from Time Extension, which is, of course, part of the N-Life family, which means
random.
YouTuber LGR rescues 20-year-old teddy bear PC. And then the subtitle is very strange indeed. Look at him. Look at the bear PC.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw him earlier.
I don't think I like him.
Why don't you like it? It's a jungle scog with a PC in it.
Yeah, but it looks like someone's like inserted a screen into a poor, sad bear.
It's like a Teletubby.
Like a cyborg.
Like a scary Teletubby, yeah.
We're used to seeing some pretty strange and interesting custom computer setups, but the Bearabyte PC probably takes the prize for the weirdest. It is an IKEA Varlig Big Boy teddy bear with a Pentium 3 personal computer inside, and is the subject of the latest video from the YouTuber LGR, who recently rescued the machine after seeing a Twitter user named @compgeek posting about it being up for sale on Craigslist in LA. According to LGR in the video, many of his viewers had tagged him in the initial post, and although he lived on the opposite side of the US, he eventually found a way to get someone to ship it across the country to him so he could take a closer look. If you're anything like us, your main question upon seeing this for the first time is probably, why does it exist in the first place? And, well, the answer to that is surprisingly kind of sweet. It is
I bet it smells like smoke.
I said it will get so hot.
That's what it looked like before he cleaned it up.
Oh my God.
I bet that stunk.
It's pretty grim. All these links in the dump below if you want to see them.
It's grey. And the photo of it clean, it's like a golden brown.
Yeah.
It is the work of Peter Isaacson, a case modder and computer fan who originally built it for his wife, who apparently loved teddy bears, before later regifting it to his child. It is the third case mod Isaacson ever worked on, per his old website accessed via the Wayback Machine, and he was even at one point planning to take orders to build more before IKEA discontinued the brand of bear used for this specific mod. Yes, that means this is one of a kind, unsurprisingly. When it arrived with LGR after its cross-country trip, it apparently came with all kinds of general nastiness and hadn't been tested in a long time. But the YouTuber cleaned it all up with an air compressor, replaced some parts, including the power supply and optical drives, and gave the friend-shaped PC some much-needed TLC. As a result, by the end of the video, he was able to install the Windows ME OS on the machine and even got to demonstrate some bear-themed games on the computer, such as Fatty Bear's Birthday Surprise and Mech Warrior 2 Ghost Bear's Legacy.
Very good.
And there we are. That's the story. LGR's a great YouTube channel, by the way.
I don't understand the appeal of that specific item, though, because if it was... it's weird in a way, like, that we are fickle like this, but like, if it was an official thing, if IKEA had released a one-off computer bear, then you might be like, oh wow, that's like an interesting piece of stuff. But because a man bought an IKEA teddy bear and put a computer in it, that doesn't make it appealing to me. Like,
it's a story of love, Peter.
It is a story of love.
Yeah,
he made it for his wife.
Do you hate love?
Yeah.
Would you not make your wife a bear PC if
Peter hates love.
The reason is, I did it once and she didn't appreciate it, so now I'm really cross that someone else's wife did. That's actually why I'm secretly mad about
You're just
it.
Jealous.
I'm jealous. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, if it was an official item, it's like, oh, this is a very interesting collectible piece. Yeah. But it's just a thing that a person made he just Frankensteined two objects together.
Yeah. He's the kid from Toy Story.
Yeah, he is.
But it's now been given value by internet notoriety.
Now it has, yeah.
Before it was worthless, whereas now that there's been a YouTube video about it and subsequent news stories, it actually has value.
I agree.
I bet that Mr. LGR is absolutely gutted that he now can't get rid of this bear PC because he's given it value.
Maybe we need to make one. If we make one and then we post about it, maybe people will talk about us and want to buy it.
Do you reckon
Emma
will mind if we rip up the Jungle Scott?
Well, we could get another one. We don't have to rip her up.
We can embed a PS5 in it and set the whole thing on fire when we turn it on.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the weird news. Thank you, everybody, for submitting your weird news. It's now time for the big discussion. It's big discussion time. Time for this week's big discussion, which comes courtesy of Cameron Keywood. Remember, go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Support, submit some questions. Support us, then submit some questions. And one of them could be the big discussion, just like Cameron's. He says, Ole Bap, according to According to a Bloomberg article by Jason Schreier, Bungie has had a role in reevaluating The Last of Us's faction's multiplayer. Bungie expressed concerns about the game's ability to keep players engaged for a long time, which is why it was rumored to not be at the showcase. Sony, since acquiring Bungie, has formed a live service center of excellence where Bungie evaluates upcoming live service games, and from what it seems, Bungie wasn't convinced by what it saw from Naughty Dog's offering. What do you think of this situation? Do you still have hope for the new faction's multiplayer? Cameron J. Keywood. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you, Cameron.
This has been a bit of a twisting tale because initially all we heard was this statement from Naughty Dog on Twitter. The Last of Us fans, we know many of you have been looking forward to hearing more about our Last of Us multiplayer game. We're incredibly proud of the job our studio has done thus far. But as development has continued, we've realized what is best for the game is to give it more time. Our team will continue to work on the project as well as our other games in development, including a brand new single-player experience. We look forward to sharing more soon. We're grateful to our fantastic community for your support. Blah, 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 blah. Moments later, an article that was clearly in the works for a while from Jason Schreier at Bloomberg emerges. Sony Group Corp has slowed down development on an upcoming multiplayer game in its long-running The Last of Us video game series as the creators reassess its quality and long-term viability, according to four people familiar with the project. The team working on the game was scaled back after a recent evaluation, said the people, who asked not to be named because they weren't authorized to speak publicly. A small group remains on the project while the company reevaluates the direction. While the game has not been cancelled, many of its developers have been moved to other projects. Following requests for a comment from Bloomberg News, Naughty Dog, the Sony subsidiary working on the project, put out a statement on Twitter, saying that we've realized what's best for the game is to give it more time. Sony has invested heavily in games as a service, or video games designed to be monetized beyond their initial sales through ongoing purchases. As part of that push, it asked another of its video game studios, Seattle-based Bungie, to evaluate the games across its portfolio. Bungie raised questions about The Last of Us multiplayer project's ability to keep players engaged for a long period of time, which led to the reassessment. Then following that, this is per Sammy Barker at Push Square, in the aftermath of the Bloomberg report, Giant Bomb's Jeff Grubb weighed in on the topic. All I've heard about this game is that it looks a lot like a studio's first live service game and that Naughty Dog wanted to do things its way, which maybe didn't bode well for factions. So it very much seems that Naughty Dog and Sony were completely caught off guard by Bloomberg's request for comment before they went live with their story, rushed out this statement, and now we can see a little bit more about what's going on with this faction's multiplayer. It was initially meant to be released in 2020, announced in 2019, I think, and meant to release in 2020 alongside The Last of Us Part 2, but they decided to split it off. They've been working on it for ages. We know Sony have a renewed focus on live service games across the board, and they're working on bloody tons of them. We knew this was probably going to be a live service game and that Bungie were going to be involved, but Bungie don't seem to like it.
Well, apparently, so the articles I read is that Bungie told Sony and Naughty Dog not to put it in the showcase.
Right.
Told
them not to.
It was originally going to be in there, but they basically were like, don't do that to yourself. It's not ready. It's not going to be. And essentially, like, from what I've read online, basically said that they needed to reassess the game and, you know, figure out if it was going to work, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. I went on the community tab and I asked for some opinions.
I bet they were really just so level-headed.
Well, actually, surprisingly so.
Oh my goodness.
Normally
unhinged.
Unhinged, yeah, truly. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still a few people out there that are categorically should not be allowed on the internet, but hey, sure. Some of you are.
Sure. We can't control that.
Harrison said, Sony should definitely have other more experienced studios weigh in on this type of service. It's still a relatively new beast and one which should be handled with care and input from more experienced developers to ensure success. If done correctly, I believe that live service games can become a user-friendly experience, which allows a studio to financially safety net they need to continue creating more original work. Baby Loves Pie said,
don't we all?
Bungie's pretty much been the first at a lot of these a lot of things, at least with getting things right, and Destiny is a rare case of live service done right. Other studios are still trying to figure it out, but once they get hold of it, we'll start to see a new wave of, hopefully, very well-done live service games. These are a new thing in terms of popularity now. It's always going to have a rocky start, but there's a reason why developers keep trying to have their own Destiny. They'll figure it out eventually. Then, in a more specific case, Malik said, I think this will be a very good thing for factions. Multiplayer has never been Naughty Dog's thing, as any players that played an Uncharted or Last of Us multiplayer were most definitely in the first... mostly in the first weeks after release. I'm not expecting this to be a huge, but if it's at least quality and better than previous Naughty Dog multiplayer offerings, then the Last of Us fans might be happy with this. And then someone said, Joe said, in theory, Bungie are right. Players will lose interest if there isn't enough long-term engagement for plans for the game. However, I think Bungie overestimate the model they've been using since breaking free of Activision. To be blunt, it should not be as successful as it is. Holding new content hostage behind DLCs that are almost the price of full games, as well as seeing season pass and selling cosmetics, is at least one layer too much monetization. And to apply it to factions would now condemn the game to backlash.
Hmm.
So
good points.
Lots of opinions regarding, yes, Bungie are good at what they do. They know what they're doing. Mm. They've done it for a long time. But whether Bungie just kind of got lucky with Destiny.
I've heard a few people say they were the first, because they were the first through the door, really, to do this kind of thing.
Exactly. Whether they know exactly what makes a good live service game now that's starting out, rather than they just know how to maintain a good one like Destiny 2.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, it's got longevity, so clearly... there's something there. Like, Destiny's not for me, but the fact that Destiny is still going and we've just had like even more stuff shown off and like, hey, Destiny, then they've got at least something, some kind of expertise that they can kind of share.
Yeah.
It could well be that it's a combination of things where they kind of just got in there first. I guess what bothers me here is that would it even have to have been a live service game in the first place? Could they not have just like come up with an interesting multiplayer game that wasn't live service per se? I guess nowadays, a game that is kind of built to be just multiplayer is almost by definition now the live service model. Like, I'm trying to think of a multiplayer game that's come out in the past few years that isn't in some way a bit live service-y, or at least has like a level of microtransactions and stuff.
Mm.
So... I don't know. Like, I would agree that Bungie probably are they're not a bad company to be giving advice on this. And if they looked at what has been developed so far and said, maybe you need to spend more time on that, then they're probably to some extent right about that. But I guess I'm just a little bit like, I just think it's a bit of a shame that they're using the live service model at all. You know, like, we're not the biggest fans of it, I don't think, as a kind of a group, but it's a shame. That being said, as someone mentioned in the comments, Naughty Dog's previous multiplayer kind of attempts haven't been particularly exciting, so maybe
The Last of Us 1 had great multiplayer.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I played a lot of that, right. And I really liked it, but the Uncharted games weren't very good.
Well, there were some comments that previous... multiplayer games for Naughty Dog have been pay to win, kind of.
Right.
So they were hoping that that's not also the case in factions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe with Uncharted, not with Last of Us, I don't think. I don't know. You could buy anything, actually.
Fair.
Probably Uncharted, then.
Mm. I do think that it makes sense that Bungie are helping other studios out with things that are not their forte, like multiplayer games, like Naughty Dog. I do think that their PvP games in Destiny and their kind of like multiplayer experience is really good in terms of like the actual level of things you can do together and how much you can play with other people. So in that stead, I think that that's great. And I'm glad that they are helping Naughty Dog down the road of how to make a good multiplayer game. However, if they'd have said like, oh, you need to make sure your players can have a good experience, or you need to make sure your players are like getting enough out of the game to play it with their friends, that's one thing. But the longevity of people sticking around is just their way of saying, make people spend more money on your game by sticking around for longer. Which makes me feel less good about Bungie helping out. I know that in our capitalist business model that we've got going on, that it's make money or die is essentially the way the games go. And it's a shame, but I don't think we're going to get away from that anytime soon. So if Sony are going to Naughty Dog, if this game doesn't make money, like, it will be a failure. If the players play it for a month, have a nice time playing with their friends, and then don't continue to spend money on it for the next 7 years, like they have done with Destiny, then it's a failure, basically. Mm. Like I say, I do trust Bungie with multiplayer. I think that they've got a really nice formula with Destiny in terms of how you play and the gameplay itself. Do I wish there was less things you could spend money on in Destiny? Absolutely. Do I think that they charge way too much money for everything they put into the game? Yes, of course I do. Do I think Destiny will ever end? No. It will exist until the heat death of the universe. Bungie will be making DLCs until there is simply no more light left in the world. And I think that that's just fact. So, yeah, I'm glad that they're helping out. It's a shame. I'm not really that bothered about factions myself. I'll give it a go if it's good, but I'm not in, like, any urge to be like, God, I hope it comes out soon.
Yeah, I agree.
But hopefully it'll help them out, and I'm hoping that they won't go to the same level that Bungie go with their monetization and the amount of content behind a paywall that Destiny 2 has. Mm. So, yeah.
I'm concerned it has now been in development too long to be good. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned that they have been working on this internally for some time and they've gone through several ideas, and now Bungie's come in and said, that's not right, that's not working, and they're having to redo certain bits. And Naughty Dog, we've heard through loads of different accounts that they sort of are a bit up themselves, especially within Sony's portfolio, because they think that they are, perhaps rightly, superior to other studios, mm-hmm. and they want more control of their IP than perhaps other studios have. And that's going to create some conflict. And I think there's going to be what we might end up getting is something that's either not fully formed or something that's just a mismatch of really strange ideas that don't really work. I really like The Last of Us's multiplayer from the first game. I played a lot of it. It was necessary for the platinum, which was annoying, but I did enjoy it. And when they said that they were doing a multiplayer for The Last of Us Part 2, I thought, great, because the first one was really fun. Mm-hmm. And I'd be looking forward to playing more of that. Whatever this is evolving to become, it's clearly changed a lot from the initial plans they had for it.
Yeah.
And just the descriptions alone that we're hearing leads me to believe that it's something that I'm not personally going to enjoy. Mm-hmm. But on a fundamental level, in terms of do we have much hope for it, let's revisit this quote here from the Jason Schreier article. The Last of Us video game series, as the creators reassess its quality and long-term viability. So they're not even sure if they're... That wording tells me that they're not even 100% committed to even seeing it through.
Yeah.
They said it's not cancelled, but a lot of the developers have been moved off it. Does that mean they're starting again from scratch? Or does that mean that they're basically saying, we're pouring too much money into this, we don't have a lot of faith in this, let's put a skeleton crew on it and see if they can turn the tide, and then we'll put more people back on it? Whatever the situation is, it doesn't fill me with hope Mm-mm. that this is going to be good or even release at all. And we've spoken about it on this podcast before, as you've said a minute ago, Peter. Like, we've dabbled in live service games here and there, you probably more so than Peter and I, Ashton, but they're just not really the kinds of games that we want, and particularly want from Sony.
Yeah.
And they showed two games, didn't they, at the showcase that were clearly new live service type games. And admittedly, they were CG announcement trailers, but the reaction to that was not good. Mm. Not just because they didn't look particularly interesting, but also because it clearly doesn't matter who's developing them, Naughty Dog or not. Maybe the core audience that Sony has doesn't really want that kind of game.
Well, it's also the issue of the way that live service games work is that you have to really convince players who are fans of live service games to jump ship of the game that they've spent money on and come and play your game. Like, people who have pumped hundreds, if not thousands of pounds into Destiny 2 are not just going to be like, well, that looks all right. Maybe I'll stop spending money on Destiny 2, abandoned it, and go and spend a bunch of money on somewhere else. Same thing with, like, COD or World of Warcraft or other kind of, like, online games where you've got money behind it. People will spend that every hour of their free time playing those games. They won't play anything else. And to get those people, that core live service fan demographic, to go somewhere else is practically impossible, which is why every single live service game that we see come out just flops yeah. so quickly.
Because you either don't like them at all, in yeah. which case you don't try it, or you do like them.
But you're already but attached you like to one. You're married yeah. to Destiny. You can't get married, you can't cheat on Destiny with yeah. other live service game that's going to fail. Yeah, so
that's a good point.
They've also got to convince the I would say that probably the majority of the people who own a Sony console for the exclusives who want to play single player games that actually maybe they want to play live service games instead. Mm. Yeah. That doesn't mean that single player games, they're going to stop producing them. I think they've said categorically that, that's not the case. And obviously
they mentioned that one in the article.
Naughty Dog, yeah, yeah says that they're working on another single player project that they'll have more news on soon. But who's it for?
Mm.
I don't really get it. I think the industry probably has shifted a lot since Sony poured this money into making 12 live service games or whatever ridiculous number it is. I think this is probably just the tip of the iceberg in terms of Naughty Dog's game is probably getting the ransom share of Bungie's attention because they're the big studio and it's the big franchise. It's a proven franchise. It can't be a flop after the success of the TV show. You know, mm-hmm. you want to carry on that momentum. But with games like, what are they called? They're so rubbishly named. The showcase ones.
I don't know.
It's got a dollar sign. Fair game.
Oh, fair game.
Fair game dollar yeah. sign. Like that, you know, they're not proven entities. They're an investment, but realistically, especially considering the whole point of these games is that they're meant to be the only game that you play.
It doesn't yeah. look why unique compared to any of the others.
But why would you make 12 of them?
Yeah.
Why would you have your player base compete with your own player base?
Because either way, they still make money. If you release a bunch
yeah.
and
yeah.
you say, well, there's something here for everyone. We've got the anime live service game.
Yeah.
We've got the shooty live service game. We've got the zombie live service game. We've got the foam live service game.
In principle, I understand. Like, I understand.
You're bound to want to play one of them, please.
But if you've got, like, say 10% of the potential audience sets up camp in one, 10% in another, yeah. and the rest you've got 5% sprinkled throughout. Wouldn't you rather amass all of those into try and amass them into one game? I get that they each game has different appeals, but it's like, why would you create several games where the express purpose is to make it the only thing that those players want to play?
I guess surely they're just worried that it's impossible to make a game.
Well, it is. That's yeah, why well, Destiny's yeah. one of the, Destiny and Fortnite are like the only ones that really can do it because yeah. they were there first. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole, I don't know. I don't know what this game's going to be.
It
I
makes
have
me
no idea.
So mad whenever like it's just like, oh, Sony really want to make this work. I just can't fathom being sat on your top of your, in your throne, Mr. Sony, looking down at your kingdom and being like, the live service games that everyone is releasing are terrible. No one's playing them. But the golden child, Destiny 2, does so well.
Yes.
We'll make another.
Everybody who releases more. A live service game fails. But what if we're different?
But what if,
but what if it's different
I'm built
for
different.
Us?
I'm not like other girls. I'm a live service game that people will play.
It's a really interesting time at the moment because after all the stuff that Microsoft and Xbox have been going through, Sony had an open goal with this showcase and they tripped an 8 tarmac.
Yeah.
They're playing football on the tarmac. That's where they are.
They dived so far into the grass they hit tarmac.
This news isn't positive either. It's not going to get quite as much traction as a showcase that's watched by millions of people online, of course, but it's like what is going to happen next with these two studios? Because massive companies. Xbox obviously has their showcase tomorrow? At the time, next Sunday, and that's going to be fascinating. I can't wait to see what happens there. Of course, we are fast approaching not E3 season as well, so we'll have all sorts of live stream reactions, and we'll be covering as much as we can on the podcast.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of it's a bit of a tumultuous situation.
Well,
Jim Ryan, PlayStation isn't really. It's performing, but it's not really cutting the mustard with the PlayStation fans.
Yeah, well, this is the thing with not E3 season coming up. You have to ask, like, or maybe the showcase was a bit bad because they're sitting on a few things for like Summer Games Fest or something, or Summer Game Fest.
Singular. Yeah.
But even if that's the case, if you know that you're like saving all your good stuff for not E3 season,
why do the showcase now?
Why not wait a couple of months and do the showcase then with everything? So it's not even a good excuse if that turns out to be the reason why it was a bit flip.
Yeah.
I'm a bit, not treacherously entering the second half of this year in terms of games, but I'm not there's nothing out there at the moment that I'm like,
I feel like
gee,
all the good stuff's happening.
Can't
already.
Wait for that to come out, apart from maybe Spider-Man, which might come out in fall, question mark. Everything else, I mean, things have been coming out and they've been getting good reviews, like Street Fighter and stuff that's coming out soon, they're getting really good reviews. Like
Gollum.
However, I just do not think that either company at this point have got anything that is really making everyone excited.
Yeah. What's happening?
The individual companies, the individual developers and publishers are making games that people are excited for, but there's no first party games that people are like real jazzed, apart from Starfield, which even I don't know if people are really excited for that or cautiously optimistic.
Apparently there's some vague suggestion that maybe Fable will be at the Xbox showcase.
Well, that glitter that they done,
the glitter, which I mean it's a bit tenuous. I hope it's true because I really like Fable, but so that could be a bit of a big big get for
but it
them.
Won't come until 2024.
Well, that's the thing, they would just be saying here it is coming in 2 years' time.
We will have to see where we are in a couple of months' time once all the showcases and streams are done with. But you're right. As it stands, what's coming next? We're still not entirely sure. Hopefully we get some announcements soon. But as with as is the case with The Last of Us Factions, it doesn't seem to be anywhere closer to release. We're going to be waiting on this for at least a year and a half, 2 years.
Until it gets cancelled.
If ever, it will be quietly cancelled. But it's not great.
No.
It's not ideal. Well, make sure you let us know about what you thought of all the things we've discussed today in the comments and various other places on the internet. And you can also support us and follow us there. Peter's going to tell you about some of them right now.
YouTube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. All of our videos on YouTube and all of our live streams on Twitch, apart from special occasions such as Not E3, which is coming up. That might be streamed on YouTube.
Yes.
If you've got Amazon Prime, you're already paying for something called... What's it called?
Huh?
What's
this? A Twitch sub.
Twitch Prime, is it called?
It's just a Prime subscription.
I think it's got a name, but anyway, I decided to.
I don't think it has a name.
I think it's called Twitch Prime or something like that.
I don't know.
Anyway, you're already paying for a Twitch sub that you can use for free and spend it on us. When we're streaming on Twitch, we are modded by Lob Rotovich, Trialing Badger, and Mr. Black. You can also find us on twitter.com and facebook.com/TeamTripleJump for video and live stream announcements, legacy video content, bits of weird and not weird news, highlights of the week from Twitch, loads of things. TikTok.com/@TeamTripleJump for our ticks and sometimes talks, and patreon.com/TeamTripleJump for loads of different tiers with loads of different rewards that you can look at and choose.
We have a website. It's JJU.MP. And if you'd like to work for us, you can go to JJU.MP/careers, where we are currently hiring a freelance writer. If you think you can do it, head on over there. If you'd like to join our Discord and chat with our wonderful community of geeks. Why not go to JJU.MP/Discord. On there, modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Hollow Eyes.
Don't know what's happening.
And if it's time to do something, bloody well do it, all right? If you want to listen to the podcast in its audio form, why not go to triplej.map/podcast. To catch up on any of our live stream VODs, go to triplej.map/VODs. To book any of us three or James Jenkins on Cameo, go to triplej.map/Cameo. Lastly, from me, if you want to buy any sick and cool merch, like this jacket or this t-shirt or that t-shirt, then why not go to triplejumpshop.com and make sure you're following at @triplejumpshop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements. Remember, we can't make any new merch until we sell what we've got. Yep. So buy some logo merch, please, if you don't mind.
Go on.
Thanks.
6,000 shirts each, please.
Please.
We do not have 12,000 shirts sitting in the stocks.
Or do we?
Stocks.
We have 30,000.
Why don't you follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter at @ThatPeterAustin and @ScrambledAshton, and myself just on Twitter at @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Thursday being the joint streams.
Blaze it.
Also on Twitch. They're all on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. Weirdest Games is monthly, a week early for patrons. After Dark Podcast is fortnightly on Monday for patrons. The podcast is every Saturday and we do shows all the bloody time. Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. A couple of things this week. The freelance writer position, as Ashton said, go there. Mm-hmm. TripleJ.MP/careers.
I've got something to add to this.
Go on.
A list went out on Thursday. 10 things you didn't know about the Grand Theft Auto series. As I mentioned on my solo stream, and I probably mentioned on the joint stream, There's a sponsored stream, sponsored list, and it would actually really help us if you can go and engage with that. Literally just, you know, get some eyes on it. I think they would just be happy to see some views. So, you know, probably, I don't know if it's like, okay.
A link, click through it.
Click through the link if there's a link. I don't know, I can't remember if there is, but either way, just go and watch it and make sure it's been looked at. And if you can share it somewhere, that would genuinely be really helpful.
Yeah.
Stick it on the GTA subreddit or something.
We would love that.
Yeah.
This week also, June forecast. So if you want to know when everything's happening this month, because boy golly, is there a lot. It might be the longest one yet. Go check that out. It should be out already, I reckon. So please go watch that. If you wouldn't mind. No one else
if
does.
If you wouldn't mind, go on.
So it'd be great if you did.
Next week, we are live reacting to Summer Game Fest. That'll be Thursday night. Mm-hmm. There's also the Future Games show on Saturday. On the podcast next week, we'll be covering Summer Game Fest. And then there's a Future Games show on Saturday, which I think we're also reacting to. I believe we're an official co-sponsor.
Co-streamer,
which is very cool. So come check that out. And depending on what time the Xbox and... Starfield showcases. I'm going out for dinner on...
I think it's at 8 p.m.
Okay. I might be back in time because if I'm home, I might just stream reactions to that.
Yeah.
I might just do that.
I'm going to be watching it anyway, so...
Yeah. So there may be an impromptu stream with one or two of us or all of us. It doesn't...
But there may not be. But we're not reacting to everything because there's about three or four more shows next week that we're not reacting to.
Yeah.
Just the big ones.
We'll talk about all the big stuff, even if a big thing happens in one of those smaller ones in the podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah, the week after, because it's just Summer Game Fest next week and everything else the week after.
Yep,
so we'll have a bumper podcast in 2 weeks.
Prepare yourself. Mm. The games are coming, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
So there we are. Thank you so much for listening / watching, everybody. Just enough time to talk about the sponsor once again, which is, of course, the official partnership between Nando's and Diablo 4, the new hot sauce Nando's Diablo 4.
Not to be confused with the actual
one, which I didn't realize existed, but clearly I should be on the marketing team.
Yeah.
Thank you for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.